Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Recently, in Denver, our children's hospital advised the parents of a four-year-old boy, Dylan Walborn, to starve him to death. How could that be? Dylan was handicapped, and it took 24 days to kill him by starvation. A devastating story, as detailed by the Denver Post. Sadly, America's euthanasia movement grows as children and adults in increasing numbers are starved to death. A tragic milestone in the euthanasia movement was the judicial killing of Terry Schindler Schiavo in Pinellas Park, Florida. Now, at Denver Bible Church, one of our members is urging all of us to read a new book called A Life That Matters, The Legacy of Terry Schiavo. And this book is written by Terry's family, Mary and Robert Schindler, her parents, and their kids, Suzanne and Bobby. Now, we became involved with Terry's story in October 2003. We look back in our archives. That's when we did our first full show about her predicament. And when Leslie Hanks of Colorado Right to Life and one of our Denver Bible Church members first went down to Florida to see if there was anything she could do, along with others concerned, to save Terry. But Bobby Schindler, you were involved, of course, long before that. Thank you for fighting so hard to save your sister's life.
No, I appreciate it. And I'm always a little humbled by when people thank me for fighting for life and for my sister, because I truly believe, if anyone, and really one of the reasons we wrote the book and people will see, is anyone faced with the circumstances that my family was faced against would do the same thing our family did.
Right. Bobby Schindler, I'd like to take a minute to let you know, because we haven't talked, and I know that hundreds of people, thousands of people around the country were involved in trying to save your sister's life, but I'd just like to tell you the little bit how her life affected us here in Denver at Denver Bible Church, for example. We've had a few of our church members go down to Florida, probably spent between them about 2 months down there. And there was very little, as it turns out, that individual people can do, but there are people concerned. Friends of ours, Patty and Brad Johnson of Colorado Right to Life, organized a local Terry rally. And we had a Senator Doug Lamborn carry the Colorado Nutrition and Hydration legislation to try to outlaw starving to death an innocent person. And even this very week, Leslie Hanks, she's vice president at Colorado Right to Life, she's worked with Senator John Evans and Representative Debbie Stafford here to carry a resolution to recognize March 31st as Terry Day, to remember Terry and all people who are medically vulnerable. And so that's some of what we did. Cheryl Ford, you know Cheryl Ford, of course, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, she wrote the book, Our Fight for Terry. We've interviewed Cheryl, and I had a bit of a battle with Catherine Cryer from CNN, who supported the starvation of your sister. And the last thing I'll tell you is one of the Columbine dads, a dear Christian man, Brian Rohrbaugh, whose son Danny was killed at Columbine, he helped to co-host some of the shows we did, urging people to fight to save Terry's life. So,
So
Bobby, it's an honor now to talk to you.
Well, thank you. And you know, some of these things that I'm hearing for the first time regarding the people involved in trying to save my sister's life. You know, people that just all over the country and really outside the country, beyond the country. And I don't think our family will ever be able to adequately thank and show how grateful we are and we were for what everybody was doing to try and do something to save Terry's life. It's just overwhelming.
And it goes all the way up to President Bush, who flew from his ranch in Crawford, Texas, to Washington to sign that bill to have the federal courts take a second look to see if your sister's life could be saved last minute.
Right, and I think because of all the people that were involved, including the President, Congress, the Governor of Florida, the Vatican, and even the Pope, I think we're seeing really how strong this euthanasia movement, that's occurring in our country right now.
In other words, the euthanasia movement is obviously so strong because with all the extraordinary effort to save one woman's life, we failed, and the
right.
euthanasia side won.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
When you have the most powerful men in the country doing what they can to save one person's life and are unsuccessful, it really makes a clear illustration on just how strong this movement is.
Right. Now, I said that we got involved October 2003. There were people in our church, in the Denver pro-life movement, who were talking about Terry long before that. But I'm sure you realize that our nation is suffering in so many ways. It seems like every day there are 1,000 tragedies. And so, and Terry's story for us broke through the noise of life in October 2003. But how about for you? By that time, wasn't that maybe the second time that her husband, Michael Schiavo, got a court order to starve her to death?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well,
it was in 2003. That's absolutely right.
Bobby, could you tell us just a little bit, not to, of course, recount the whole story, but just how was it for you for this story when it began and then when you realized you had a major fight on your hands?
Well, our family, really, we went into this and we're really blindsided by, I think, the people behind what Michael was trying to do. We had no idea, as I just spoke about, how strong this movement was, and that became quite evident as time went on, trying to save my sister's life. But, you know, for us, we're just a normal, typical family, which is what we try to explain in our book, that had one intention, and one intention only, and that was to bring Terry home and care for her. And it just didn't make any sense, and we couldn't believe what we were coming up against just to do that. And that's some of the things we try to detail in our book, some of the events that occurred, not only the past 5 years during this legal battle, but prior to that as well. And it's just astonishing what one family had to do just to bring someone home and care for them. It was just unbelievable.
One of the startling episodes in this whole nightmare was when there were nurses, at least one nurse I recall, that gave an affidavit saying that your sister, Terry, could be fed orally by mouth. And so that when Judge Greer ruled that the feeding tube would be removed, then the natural thing is the family would want to feed Terry just by mouth. And would he permit that?
No, and again, that's why, you know, one of the many, many things that were never reported by the media, but you're absolutely right. Judge Greer went as far, and there are many people in the legal community that believe he violated Florida law by doing that, by issuing that order, where he even stopped palliative care for my sister. So we weren't able to do anything to even provide her comfort while she was being dehydrated and starved to death, because it would violate his order of nothing by mouth.
Mm. Bobby, I hate to ask this question, but it goes with a tragic case we just had with a 4-year-old boy who was starved to death. But how long was it? How many days did your sister survive without food?
It was March 18th, and she died on March 31st, so it was almost 14 days, two full weeks.
14 days. And how about liquids during that time?
The only thing sustaining Terry, which was food and water. She wasn't on a respirator. She was on no other type of machinery, only food and water. It began on March 18th. That was the beginning of that being denied to her until she succumbed by dehydration on March 31st.
So, and thank you for making that clarification. There are many people, because of the media's horrendous reporting, many people think that Terry was being kept alive by sophisticated technology and she was only being fed.
Well, that's the problem. The way the laws the way we look at the laws today and the way they're written in the books is that we now consider food and water as medical treatment, as extraordinary means.
Right.
And we look at it as artificial life support.
And that's just been recently
that's been changed.
And that's
the law.
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes, Bobby, and that's the law in Colorado in our medical ethics committees affirm that they say that if you withdraw food and water, only they like to call it artificial nourishment and hydration.
That's right.
I don't know why they can't just call it, well, I know why, but food and water, so that if you withdraw food and water and you starve someone to death, that is not considered euthanasia, it's not considered suicide, it's not considered killing them.
Right, because the law recognizes that not as ordinary care anymore, or basic care, it's looked upon as artificial, it's looked upon as medical treatment, which allows them, at least legally, to do this to persons with disabilities.
Right, and I like how you put that, at least legally, because obviously it's more immoral. And if a government passes a law and says you can own black men because they're black, or you can kill Jews because they're Jews, those laws are inherently invalid, and it is immoral. It's the equivalent of kidnapping or murder. When you do commit these crimes, even if the government says, well, we'll let you do it.
Right, and that's the problem today. We look at people like Terry differently. And really the problem our family has faced and why a large part of the society sided with Michael. It's not so much that they agreed with Michael Schiavo, but they agreed with what he was doing, because they would see these images of Terry and the condition that she was in, and they would say to themselves, oh, you know, boy, I would not want to live that way. So nobody would choose to live as a disabled person if we all had the choice. But that does not mean that we should simply treat these people by finding easier ways to terminate their lives.
Right, of course. Now, Bobby, and we're speaking to Bobby Schindler, one of the authors of A Life That Matters, The Legacy of Terry Schiavo, A Lesson for Us All. Bobby, I want to now bring up another aspect of what I'm hoping to talk to you about. During this battle to save your sister's life, we've said how many people, and including leaders, Republican leaders, conservative leaders, Christian leaders, pro-life leaders, but we began to notice something that was very disconcerting. And I'll describe it to you by a program that aired on Salem Radio Network. Now, I'm sure you know about Salem, right?
I'm aware of Salem. Yeah.
Dennis Prager, Michael Medved, Hugh Hewitt, all considered pro-life, conservative, religious talk show hosts. And what I'm about to describe to you from them was said by many other pro-life conservative leaders. They all three got together on Dennis Prager's program, and Dennis asked Michael Medved and Hugh Hewitt this question. He said, okay, we're all against what's happening to Terry in Florida, but what if there was an advanced written directive? And now you've just properly said that even when the government says you can kill someone, it's still wrong. And starving someone to death is like killing them, suicide, euthanasia, or murder. Well, these three pro-life, conservative, religious spokesmen, they all said that, yes, if there's a written directive, then it should be legal, and Terry should be starved if there was a written directive. Now, and that was because she was brain damaged. Now, Dennis Prager asked Hugh Hewitt this question. He said, well, What if it's not brain damage? What if it's a quadriplegic? And Hugh Hewitt said, absolutely, they also have that right. And now, well, Bobby, I'd like to, maybe we could spend a couple minutes seriously talking through this. Here at Bob and Yurt Live and at Denver Bible Church, we identified this as almost an unintentional, accidental turn by the pro-life leaders in America. When they were trying to fight to save your sister's life, they accidentally and in the blink of an eye started supporting suicide by starvation if there was a written directive. Have you thought through that, and could we talk about that for a moment?
Sure. Well, I disagree with that. And as a Catholic, and to listen to Pope John Paul II's proclamation in March of 2004, he said quite clearly that as Catholics, we are morally obligated to sustain anyone who's on a feeding tube. And we cannot, as Catholics, ever permit even ourselves or anyone else, for that matter, to remove simply basic care, which is food and water.
Yeah, God in the Bible calls for us to feed those who cannot feed themselves.
Right.
And it's not wrong to let an irreversibly dying person die. If someone is dying, advanced cancer, a terrible accident, and they're truly dying and it's irreversible, it's okay to let them die. It's not okay to kill someone who was not dying. So now your sister was not dying, right?
Absolutely. No, she was. She would have lived 10, 20, 30 years.
Right. So when all the pro-life religious conservatives, I'm saying all as a figure of speech, so many said things like this over and over, this all could have been avoided if Terry had left a written directive. That sentiment was inherently immoral. Because
and I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, and I don't believe Terry, even if she did leave a written directive, would ever agree to be starved and dehydrated to death.
Right, exactly. And then the National Association of Evangelicals, you said you're Roman Catholic. This is the NAE, the president, Ted Haggard, and he stated on Fox News Channel, I heard him with my own ears, say that, you know, if there's a written directive, then these issues are resolved easily. And it seems as though hundreds of thousands of people, conservative Christians of different sorts, have gone to get written directives, and they're doing so at the behest of the conservative pro-life movement in America.
Well, it's certainly unfortunate, and that's where the need for education and what our foundation is trying to do. Unfortunately, we cannot fight those battles. We can only fight, and the only battles we intend to fight are for people that nobody can speak for these people, and in situations like my sister. Unfortunately, if someone does have a written directive because of what somebody has said, similar to what you're explaining to me now, we cannot enter those battles, and we would probably have to, if someone asked us if there was a written directive, to those means, we would probably, I don't know what kind of recourse we would have.
Well, what we would have to say is the same thing if somebody's going to kill a Jewish person or an unborn baby or own a black man. We would have to say, regardless of whether it's legal, it's wrong, and we need to do what we can to stop it.
Oh, I agree. I mean, we can be outspoken about it, but what I'm saying is, if you're able to kill my sister, who had no written directive,
right,
was killed on hearsay evidence, What chance are we going to have with someone who did fill out an advance directive and said that they wanted to be starved to death?
So there are two major battles we have. One is that the euthanasia movement and the media and our government will be inclined to kill people who don't even want to commit suicide or to be euthanized. The other battle is that as we're trying to save your sister, a significant percentage of conservative religious leaders became pro-assisted suicide. Let me give you one more example. The National Right to Life Committee, you remember the night George W. Bush was flying back to Washington. And do you remember there were two bills that were being lobbied to pass? It would either be one or the other?
That's correct.
And the one that passed was the Terry Schindler-Schiavo Act or something like that?
Well, there was actually a bill in the House was passed. I'm sorry, let me say that over. There was a bill in the Senate that was passed, which was different from the version in the House that was passed.
Well, there was...
We had to go back and then pass the Senate version back at the House again.
Bobby, there were two completely different laws being considered in both houses. One was the Incapacitated Persons Legal Protection Act. Now, that act didn't pass, although it's probably still on the National Right to Life website. They were lobbying for that bill, and the other bill that did pass was the one that had your sister's name in the title, and it was only for the federal courts to take a second look at her case. And that's the act that finally passed. But what I'd like to point out is that the pro-life Christian leaders, including National Right to Life, they were lobbying for both bills, whichever one might pass. In the Incapacitated Persons Bill, it said in the bill, and I have text of it here, that in federal law, that state-assisted suicide laws permitting the withdrawal of food or fluids would be recognized simply with a written advance directive valid under applicable law. In other words, what I'm saying, Bobby, is National Right to Life. This happened in Florida at the Florida State Legislature. It happened in Washington, D.C., and it was happening in states around the country. In the effort to save your sister, which was such a vital effort, pro-life leaders started attempting to pass assisted suicide laws as long as there was a written directive. And they were thinking, well, maybe if we pass these laws, even though they legalize euthanasia and assisted suicide, maybe Terry will be safer in this kind of climate.
Well, the circumstances surrounding the events of saving my sister back with Congress in Washington, I know there was a tremendous effort to do anything they could to try and save my sister's life. The way the bill was written, and I'd have to consult with an attorney regarding the language, was specifically to try and save Terry's life, and maybe it needed to be worded a certain way in order for it to pass. I don't know that answer, but I'm unfamiliar. Did not look at the language,
right?
Which you're referring to right now.
Right. There was a lot going on, but Bobby, if there's one thing I could beg of you, as you go forward with the foundation in this issue, to be especially alert to conservative pro-life leaders who have accidentally crossed the line, and now they support starving people to death as long as there is a written directive.
Yeah, I certainly will.
Thank you.
I believe that could be a problem, obviously, as we go forward. I know our foundation would like to do two things, and that is abolish this whole feeding tubes artificial life support, and also abolish this whole persistent vegetative state diagnosis, because that too is extremely dangerous, and we are now labeling people with disabilities in this condition in order to do one thing, and that's to terminate their lives.
Let me give the title of the book again, and then let's talk about your website for the foundation. The book is A Life That Matters, The Legacy of Terry Schiavo, A Lesson for Us All. And how about the foundation, Bobby?
Well, the foundation and the information you're offering today is valuable, so I thank you. The foundation is really trying to go after the larger issue at hand here, which is this whole quality of life mentality and attitude that seems to be gripping our nation. Our society, our nation really needs to learn and to educate people the language so they understand that we as a nation are really creating laws and doing what we can to easily or make it easier to kill those with disabilities and those with brain injuries. And that's what the goal of our foundation is, to do what we can to protect those with disabilities and provide them with a voice against future laws and against, as I said, this horrible attitude that's really taken hold of our nation.
And the website is terriesfight.org.
That's correct. It's terriesfight.org. And we just urge people, if they do support and want to help us, to go to our website and see what they can do to help us, because we certainly cannot do this alone.
Right, that's absolutely true. And so, by the way, not dead yet. I see on your homepage, you guys link to them, their disability rights advocacy group. And we have used some of their materials here in Colorado, fighting the issue generally, and also at our state capitol. And, Bobby, it's extraordinary. We have a woman testify that she was considered a vegetable. You know, you could starve her to death, but then she recovers, and she testifies at the Capitol of how painful her experience was and how wrong it would be to just starve somebody to death like her. And the legislators, they listen to her story, and then they just vote and dismiss us, dismiss the pro-life side, and keep the status quo where you could starve people to death.
Well, and again, I think it's education. And also, we're up against, I mentioned one already, where people look at my sister, these images of my sister, and they would not want to be in a situation like her, and therefore have this, attitude that let's do what we can to terminate their lives. And I think also it's a money issue. We look at people like Terry, and people, persons with disabilities, that they become a drain on our society as far as the cost involved in caring for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we simply, since they're not giving anything back, why spend the money with the medical, you know, with the healthcare problems we have already? You know, why should we spend any money on caring these people? And Rob, I got to tell you, we have a problem out there with what's going on with the way we're treating persons with disabilities.
Yeah,
and I believe it's going to get worse before it gets better.
It looks like that. Now, Bobby Schindler, for me, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, that's just like a, you know, it's just words on a piece of paper. But you were down there. You lived through their decisions. And we took their decisions, and we've posted them on our website, kgov.com. And it turns out that the judges that voted against Terry, that basically voted to go ahead and allow Judge George Greer to starve her to death, six of the justices that voted that way were nominated by Ronald Reagan, George Bush the first, and George W. Bush. All six of their judges, including William Pryor, who President Bush recess appointed 2 years ago, at the urging of most of the pro-life leaders in the country, all six voted against Terry's life. All six. And Judge George Greer is a Republican judge, grew up in a pro-life, fundamentalist, you know, Southern Baptist church his whole life. And he's one of the key people. Then it went to the Supreme Court. Seven of the nine Supreme Court justices were nominated by Republican presidents. They went ahead and let your sister be starved to death. So, Bobby, the reason we feel this is so vital is because we have pro-life leaders that we support who are confused, and they're beginning to support assisted suicide with written directives. And we advocate and lobby for judges and nominate judges who are not even pro-life. They're actually pro-choice or pro-suicide or pro-euthanasia. So, Bobby, I guess as we end this up, I'm pleading with you to fight this fight and to be tough on our Christian leaders also.
Well, certainly. And it's really just an indication of the problem we have, this growing problem we have as far as, you know, our treatment towards people like my sisters with brain injuries and severe disabilities. And we will, as a foundation, do what we can to hopefully educate people to start treating all life as sacred and stop discriminating against people just because of a brain injury or because of a disability.
Amen. Bobby Schindler, thank you so very much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I'm very grateful, and thanks for all your support and prayers.
Sure thing. And the book is A Life That Matters, The Legacy of Terry Schiavo, A Lesson for Us All, and the website Terry's Fight, that's terriesfight.org. We will be back right after this.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or kgov.com.
This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278. That was neat, talking to Bobby Schindler, and I think that he probably hasn't considered these issues before, and that he's very open to recognizing that just because we're pro-life Christian conservatives doesn't mean we actually have thought through right and wrong regarding our own strategy, regarding what we are doing. Because he was immediately able to recognize, in fact, I think he volunteered it, that if you starve someone to death, even if it's legal, even if they have a written directive, it's wrong. You're still supporting suicide, euthanasia, assisted suicide, and God calls it murder. You don't intentionally kill the innocent. And so Bobby Schindler knows that. And now the connection that needs to be made, not only by him, but by all of us, is that just because we're pro-life Christians doesn't mean we get to violate do not murder, and it's okay, because we're doing it as part of our political strategy. So Bobby gave us a promise, basically, which I was thrilled to hear. For one, I was thrilled he didn't argue, because most of the Christian pro-lifers we talk to, when we bring this up, they argue. They fight. And they say, basically, they defend those who are pro-suicide if they're conservatives. And so he was great in that he said that certainly that they would use this important information at their foundation to fight this battle. So that's what we got to do. Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Now, here at Bob and Yurt Live, are we fans of the public schools? No. We're not fans of the public schools. Why not? Well, to start with, it's a godless education system. Now, isn't that some way to start an argument with somebody or a debate? You have Christians who defend the public school system. And so you start out by saying, well, it's a godless education system. And right off the bat, the debate is hairy, because how do you defend a godless education system? How do you do that? Especially one that has young kiddies in it. What age do kids get into the public school system? We homeschool, we Christian school, we mostly homeschool, but 5 years old, the kids are in there. I remember the woman who called into Bob and Yurt Live, and she was actually crying, and she had a hard time saying her call. This is how I remember it. It was on TV. And she said, my son came home from kindergarten and said, Mommy, that my teacher kissed another teacher. And she said, well, honey, that's fine. They were probably married. And he said, Mommy, my teacher kissed another man. So she thought, oh, honey, you must have misunderstood that. And then he went back to school the next day, and he came home. First thing he says, Mommy, my teacher kissed another teacher again today. And so there are two homosexuals trying to show the kids that homosexuality is a good thing, and they're just smooching a little in school in front of the kids. And so what do you say to a devastated mom? I said, well, you are right now at this moment, you are the luckiest mom in the country, because it's only taken you 2 days to find out that they want to destroy your child. 2 days. That's got to be a record. That has got to be a record. So the public schools are a nightmare. I mentioned on the show last week that a producer friend of mine for another radio station, another talk show host, but he's a producer, he went into Google Alerts and he put in public school teacher and arrests or charges or crime or whatever. And just to find out what's going on in the news, because then Google will email you every time there's a news story like that. And he got so overwhelmed, he's given up on it. So one of the women at Denver Bible Church, one of the moms, beautiful family, she said to me Sunday, she said, you know, I heard that and I tried it. She said, I put in public school teacher and molestation. And there are so many stories, just automatically. It's just horrifying. So with all the horrendous things happening, this story probably seems just like it's funny or stupid or something. But this is a teacher charged with giving a student a wedgie. Now, that's a new one on me. For all I've heard, this is a new one. All right. This is in New York State, Albany, New York, and it's a charter school. And I know many Christians support charter schools. Why is that? Well, because they're godless schools. That's why. I mean, that's the best reason I could come up with. Right? Christians will organize, they'll run. Charter school is a public school that's run by some group of people, some kind of special interest group. And quite often it's Christian parents or conservatives or whoever. It could be atheist evolutionists who just want more, you know, evolution in the curriculum, whatever, in the spelling bees. Like the spell fish, cow, and whale. And the student says, use that in a sentence, please. And they say, the fish evolved into a cow, which evolved into a whale. Okay, so maybe you have evolutionists who want charter schools, but a lot of Christians start at charter schools. And a charter school is where the Christians put together a school, and it's a godless public school. I guess the idea is it's just less godless. Okay, so it's less godless. I remember a dear friend of mine. I always get in trouble because I talk about personal things on the air. But a dear friend of mine started a charter school, and she was telling a story, and she thought it was so cute. And here's a story. I won't embellish it. She said, so one of our teachers handed out just one sheet handout, and it had to do with evolution and alternatives, and it had the word God on it. And as the teacher handed it out, she said to the kids, fourth grade, I think it was, she said, now, if you want, you could cross out the word God. And she was telling me as though this was a good story. And I thought, it's just not right. It's just not right. When you're raising children, you raise them in the fear and admonition of the Lord, and there's no way to undo 30 hours of godless curriculum when the kids come home. How much time do you have with them before they go to bed? Another 5 hours to undo and to find out? And the kids don't tell you. I mean, this kid in kindergarten, he told his mom because he was too young to be sneaky. He was just a cute little kid. But once it gets really raw, the kids don't come home and tell mom and dad, hey, guess what's happening now? They don't do that. So anyway, this charter school teacher in Albany, did I say it was a charter school teacher? It's a charter school teacher in Albany. He is out of the classroom and in the courtroom. He's a 41-year-old guy. Here's his mugshot. You get a mugshot for giving a wedgie? There's his mugshot. And he gave a wedgie to a 10-year-old student last summer, in maybe July. And the mother complained, and she told the school administrators, the charter school administrators, she told them, and they did what any good public school administrators would do. They didn't do anything. And so now it's a half a year more, 9 months later, and finally it's the police were notified, and now he's in some degree of trouble. I don't know exactly what the penalty is. If you kill your child when your child is born, or you kill the child, quite often you don't even go to jail. And you could literally have sex with a student and not even get charged, not even go to trial, just walk free and announce in a press conference that you've begun journalism school. So with all that, I don't know what the punishment would be for a wedgie. But then again, this is a charter school, so maybe it's not a bad wedgie. I don't know. If you notice, I don't really like charter schools because it's a godless education system. And if we're going to go through the effort of running a school for kids, then run a Christian school. And if you're going to work, now homeschooling is the best by far. By far, without any doubt, homeschooling is the best. It's extremely hard to run a good Christian school. Most Christian schools are just as messed up as public schools. Now, not all, I don't think, in my experience, but most. Most. I went to a Catholic grammar school for 8 years, and I would rate the experience as somewhere between a nightmare and horrendous, as far as the immorality. How much immorality could there be in a grammar school? A lot. There could be a lot. So, but academically, it was better than the public schools. Academically, it was better than the public schools. I found that out because in high school I went to public school. First to eighth grade, Catholic school. Ninth grade, public school. And I was sort of nervous. You know, you go into high school, you're nervous. It was total review for one, two, 3 years, depending on the subject. I hardly remember learning anything new in high school. It was bizarre. It was like a joke. In fact, our religion teacher, Mr. Legg, he was a Jehovah's Witness, but he wasn't a normal Jehovah's Witness. He was a disturbed Jehovah's Witness. He would, I don't know why this is just coming back, but we would put our desks in a circle, and he would put on, you know, the old record players with the 45s and the 33s. He would put on country, western, or some kind of music, and then he would square dance in the middle of the circle by himself for 10, 20 minutes. And if students didn't show up to class, this is at Manchester Regional High School in Haledon, New Jersey. And if students didn't show up for class, he would open the window and yell for them to come into the school. Not that they were in sight. He would just yell, scream their names. And once, did it happen more than once? Once, we went in and we were all snickering because we knew where he was. He was hiding under his desk. And we all went in, we're sitting down, and he's hiding there as though we don't know where he is, and we're just all snickering. And then he said, "There's a roaring lion outside." It was Mr. Legg. Mr. Legg, the talking religion teacher. So anyway, that public schools, it was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare. And so we start Christian schools, and they're very difficult to run well. And so the absolute best is homeschool. If you can possibly homeschool, do it. For example, I'll give you an example. Right here in the newspaper, there's a picture of two planets in our solar system, Saturn and Uranus. And what's so neat about this photograph in the news is that they both have rings. And we didn't know about the rings of Uranus because it was so much further out there until more recently. But the rings of Saturn, they have been mapping those rings now for hundreds of years since telescopes were invented. And one of the things you find out if you are a student who actually learns not just the evolution fairy tale and atheism, but science, is that this planet, evolutionists, atheists, they say Saturn was formed about 5 billion years ago, give or take a half a billion. Maybe 4.5 billion years. But the rings were formed maybe 50 to 100 million years ago when a moon was wiped out or some kind of near planetary collision. But these rings are stable for countless millions of years. Only noticeable changes in the rings have been documented just since we've been documenting, mapping the rings. So the rings are changing way more quickly than atheists would imagine that they would change. And when I see stories like that, it's fun because that always happens. They always say, "Wow, we didn't think this would happen in millions of years. And there it is happening right before our very eyes." So just notice when you hear a news story like that, just remember. Okay, what else is in the news? What else would you not learn in a public school? Okay, here we have San Francisco's in the news. This is a Reuters news story. All right, here we go. They have, at San Francisco, they have their health department and they have their HIV/AIDS statistic group at the San Francisco Department of Health. And so they're quoted in this article. So you got San Francisco Department of Health. I know some people think right there is an oxymoron, but the San Francisco Department of Health. And this is what they say. Despite an overall loss in the population in San Francisco in the last 5 years, there has been an absolute gain in the number of homosexual men. So here, now, why is this interesting? Why is this interesting? It is so interesting. They're saying as San Francisco is losing population, overall the population, people are leaving, there's been an actual increase in the number of homosexuals there. Now, that's not surprising. The two are probably related to some degree. But what's interesting about that is why is the AIDS department tracking the population of homosexuals? Why? When we did that back 15 years ago, we were called homophobes and we hated homosexuals. Why? Because the disease people, the Center for Disease Control. What do you call them? The CDC. Yeah, the CDC. That's right. I used to call them the CDC. You know, like the Holy See, and then there's the CDC. Anyway, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and they keep changing their names because they're liberals, so they added prevention and whatever. But anyway, they said that AIDS and HIV have nothing to do with homosexuality, and anybody who would dare mention the two in the same sentence is a hate-filled religious bigot. So we used to go on the air and say, that's not true. Homosexuality is a major risk factor for AIDS, and AIDS is a homosexual disease the way lung cancer is a smoker's disease. And not only the entire CDC medical community, our universities, and the media would mock us and others when we said that, so they would utterly mock it and deny it, that AIDS did not discriminate. And so we pointed out that's not true, because homosexual groups were being devastated by HIV and heterosexual groups were not. Now, there are different patterns of behavior in different places and cultures around the world, and you need to take that into account. But in America, where we have pretty good statistics, AIDS is decimating the homosexual community, and kids, young kids, the littlest kids, middle school, high school, and college, they're being lied to and told that homosexuality is not related to AIDS. It affects people equally. Now, if that were true, why is the HIV/AIDS Statistics Department at the San Francisco Department of Public Health, why are they monitoring the homosexual population in San Francisco? Isn't that just flat-out discrimination? Isn't that soft bigotry? They should monitor the number of Polacks who live in San Francisco. Why don't they do that? Why don't they do that? I don't understand it. So anyway, this Reuters article goes on to say that new statistics suggest San Francisco has the highest percentage of homosexual men among major cities in the world, with a quarter of them HIV positive. A quarter of them. And so we were on the air 15 years ago trying to tell people that they're being lied to, especially young people. And a lot of young people used to watch the TV show we did. So we would make these acronyms out of words, and boy, did we get a lot of grief for it. And I understand it was a bit harsh. I know it was a bit harsh, but the purpose was to try to come up with an easy way to teach mostly young people that they're being lied to and that AIDS was a homosexual disease. And so we would take the word gay, G-A-Y, we'd say, got AIDS yet? ? Now, the point wasn't that we were hoping that homosexuals would get AIDS. Absolutely not. We love homosexuals, any group of people, to tell them that Jesus Christ died for them. They're sinning and they're destroying themselves, and you could repent and have a great life. So we would say, gay, got AIDS yet? Or HIV, heterosexuality is vindicated. And the absolute worst one we ever did was AIDS, AIDS, another infected dying sodomite. And that's what's happened to millions of people around the country. Millions of people have been killed by the lies of liberals and the media telling people that homosexuality is a healthy lifestyle, it's a valid lifestyle, and that AIDS is not especially related to the homosexual community. Everybody's equally at risk of getting AIDS. It was just a lie. It's a lie. And so even Christians today, we're trying to expose that lie. And you know how many parents we heard from over the years saying, Bob, because of your show, my kids grew up disgusted by homosexuality. Disgusted. They would never, ever even think of trying it. And we'd hear from the kids, too. Same thing. But the Christians would condemn us for being unloving toward homosexuals. When over the years, I'm thankful I got to pray with a number of homosexuals, lead some of them to the Lord. Some became friends. Some have since died. Some have become pro-life Christian activists, get married, and homeschool their kids. I mean, it's exciting. But it's a peculiar world we live in. So it's actually 26%, according to this Reuters article, 26% of the homosexual men in San Francisco are infected with the HIV virus. That's heterosexuality is vindicated. And one in five of the city's males above the age of 15 are homosexual. One in five. Man. And they wonder why the population is decreasing. All right. We're almost out of time. What are we going to do? We're almost out of time. Oh, no. Barry Bonds, he didn't get a very good welcome, right, in San Diego when the baseball season started. He was booed throughout the whole game. Whenever he did anything, he was totally booed. And why is that? That's because he's coming up on some extraordinary records. And Barry Bonds has 708 home runs. How many did Babe Ruth have? Who had the most home runs? Hank Aaron. My board op knew that. Hank Aaron has the major league record of 755 home runs. Babe Ruth had 714. Another six home runs, and Barry Bonds will tie Babe Ruth. Six. And so the reason people are booing him is because it's just not fair. When people accomplish extraordinary things and then other people cheat, like we have in Denver, the National Western Stock Show every year, huge event. It's a lot of fun. Bring your kids. They see the animals and the rodeo, and it's just great. You get the homemade lemonade, and it's good. But anyway, there are young people who enter their animals into these contests, and 18 young people were disqualified, just like teenagers, for injecting their animals with whatever they would inject to make the animals swell up. And they'd inject them along the back of the neck and different joints, and it made the animals look more muscular. And so you just can't do that. You can't start cheating by just fraud. So Barry Bonds, he's ruined his reputation for life, although not as far as O.J. Simpson has. I mean, O.J. Simpson is a murderer who should just flat out be taken out of the NFL Hall of Fame. He should be. Now, we weren't able to accomplish that, but we did destroy his Hall of Fame award back in 1999 when we bought it at auction. Also, his jerseys, you know, his pro jerseys and the ones he signed, Heisman 68, we bought those. They were cheap. They were like $8,000 or something. And the money went to the victims' families. And then we burned them on the steps of the L.A. courthouse. So it was fun, but hey, you reap what you sow, right? The Bible says your sin will find you out. This is Bob Enyart. We'll be back tomorrow, Lord willing. See you then.